Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, everybody.
TGI Monday.
TGI Monday.
Said no one ever. Except for
ever.
Us. We're pretty happy about Mondays, because that means a new episode of Today We Learned.
Absolutely. Today We Learned. Hopefully you guys aren't too upset at the Grammy wins and losses that happened yesterday.
Right.
I didn't watch the Grammys, but maybe I did, maybe I didn't.
I may have watched the Grammys.
I'm going to assume I didn't, and I'm going to assume I watched the new Sherlock episode instead. But anyways, we want to thank you guys for listening to this episode. Real quick, if you can, give us a good rating on iTunes. Give us a comment. We'd appreciate that. This is a really fun episode. It's got a very funny friend.
Ryan Sickler.
He's a great comedian.
You may know him best as one of the co-hosts of the Crab Feast podcast past and future guest Jay Larson.
Very funny.
We had him on the podcast previously, so we definitely had to get Ryan on here, and I'm glad we did, because Ryan was a lot of fun to hang out with.
A lot of
really fun.
Fun
episode.
Really great guy.
We learned a lot, guys.
It's a fun episode. So yeah, check him out on the Crab Feast and all that sort of stuff. And this episode is once again brought to you by T-Fury.com. T-Fury is the original pop culture t-shirt destination, selling unique designs every day since 2008. You can snag their shirts for only 24 hours starting at midnight.
And say you're missing a shirt from the past, you want to get it again. What are you going to do? You're going to head to the T-Fury Gallery, where you can buy old designs still in print and vote on others to come back from the dead like so many zombies. Yeah. Every 2 to 4 weeks, T-Fury adds more designs to their gallery, so be sure to keep an eye out for the return of some of your favorite shirts.
Yeah, and T-Fury shirts cover all of your favorite topics and fandoms.
And more.
Favorite topics and fandoms. I feel like topics could be the same as fandoms, but they like to use the word fandoms.
So. You know.
That is what
it's all encompassing.
It's all kingdoms, fandoms, everything.
Case in point, gaming, sci-fi, anime, TV, movies, pop culture. You name it, they probably made it into a t-shirt.
They have it in some form of a pun visual.
Yes.
Their t-shirts change daily, so check back as often as you would like.
And don't forget about the T-Fury After Hours sale, because if you miss the day's shirt by only a little, the After Hours sale is your friend. They keep the sale going into the wee hours of the morning just for you.
Yeah, just for you, me. So just for me or for everybody?
Just for you.
So it's specifically
if you're listening to this, just for you.
It's specifically for my IP address or everybody's IP address or everything?
It depends on what your IP address is.
Okay.
I presume you're stealing someone's Wi-Fi right now, so it's for you.
All right. Awesome.
So, guys, check out tfury.com/nerdist. See what today's t-shirt is all about.
Yeah, tfury.com/nerdist. We want to thank them. We want to thank you guys for downloading this episode.
And we want to thank Ryan Sickler for coming by, hanging out.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been trying to get him in for a while, and I'm glad we got him in. We're all glad we got him in. And hopefully you guys are glad we got him in, because this is a really fun episode. So without further ado, today we learn number 24 with Ryan Sickler.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Dogs that are trying to attack you from behind,
and you're probably gonna fall on fucking shit.
Yeah,
are we allowed to cuss, by the way?
Oh yes, yes. Okay. This podcast is not yet rated.
Yeah. Well, let's start there. Let's thank you guys for listening.
Welcome back to Today We Learned.
Today We Learned. My name is Razzle.
And I'm Dan.
And with us is the very funny Ryan Sickler.
And thank you guys for having me. I've been looking forward to this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks
to
for coming
on,
man.
For a while, and we're glad we had your cohort, Jay Larson, a few weeks ago.
Who had a great time, by the way. Says hello.
That's good.
Everybody loved that episode. Hopefully everybody loves this episode.
Hopefully. We'll see what we can do. It's on me if they don't. Don't worry. It's on me if they don't.
For those of you that aren't hip to the comedic stylings of Ryan Sickler, he's a very funny stand-up comic here in Los Angeles. And he also co-hosts the Crab Feast podcast with Jay Larson, one of our previous guests as well.
Yes.
And it's a very funny podcast. And check it out if you guys don't subscribe to it yet. Subscribe and buy what they're selling.
Yeah, go to thecrabfeast.com. Subscribe today.
Yeah. And so we like to start off each podcast asking the guest either a fact about themselves or something you learned recently that you find interesting or anything like that. So if you have anything you'd like to share knowledge-wise,
I will share something about myself that not a lot of people know. I'm a twin.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
I'm a fraternal twin.
Okay.
We get asked all the time.
Yeah, identical fraternal.
But I always say we're fraternal twins.
Might as well.
We did have identical twin beds. So wait, both your dads are fraternal twins?
Yeah.
Look at this fucking fraternal
twin. Oh, your dad? I didn't know your dad is.
Surprise.
Oh, see, I learned things about Dan every day.
Fraternal twin circle going right here.
Yeah, my dad's a fraternal. He was the He was the firstborn.
Might as well.
And he was he almost didn't make it because he was like 4 pounds or something like that. Like the doctors didn't think he was going to make it, and they said something like they were like, "Oh, we say you know the second one's going to make it or whatever." And my grandfather's like, "Motherfucker, better not. Like he better be making it."
Yeah.
Like, he's like.
So does that run in your dad's family then?
My grandmother, his mom, I think had a twin, had a couple twins, but they died because back in the day it was harder to do that. And then my mom's side, my other grandfather is a twin.
Damn.
And then my dad's sister has two twins.
Holy crap.
So there's a lot of twins on both sides of my mom's side and my dad's
all
side.
All fraternal?
Yes.
Yep. Wow.
Yep.
See, fraternal. My cousin has two identical twin daughters. So I think those are the only sets of twins in my family that I can think of off the top
now,
of my head.
Now, it's every other generation if I'm correct. So that means you would have twins.
Yeah, because both my siblings don't have twins.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm an only child, so just me.
I have two nephews from both my sister and my brother, and they're not twins.
They're not.
They're identical cousins.
No. Yeah.
Cousins. Was that the Patty Duke show, right? They're cousins, identical cousins all the way. Yeah. so stupid. We were talking about beds and twin beds, you mentioned.
You got some good bed facts?
It might be on this one. This page right here, I think. It's called the IKEA effect. Now, IKEA, everybody knows about IKEA. They sell furniture and they sell all sorts of, they sell delicious meatballs and all that type of stuff.
Your mileage may vary on the flavor of those meatballs.
Yeah.
I've never had them. Have you actually ever had
them? They're so
meatballs?
Good.
I heard they're good.
I've had them. My problem is that IKEA stresses me out more so than I think any place on the planet. Yeah. It's my personal hell.
And so,
I don't mind looking at furniture. I can look at that all day. It's just the people there.
Yeah.
Just want a fucking throw rug, man.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to walk through. It's like
trying to get my flooring staff.
IKEA is like, it's like,
where do I get a table lamp, man? Where the fuck is that?
It's right past the Florence, dude.
You can take the shortcut right here through bedding.
Yeah.
They're all like weird names, too. Like none of it's not like a table lamp. It's like a Schneikman's lamp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking for the Ivasanka. Am I saying that right?
Oh, see, this has an accent mark. You wanted an umlaut.
The IKEA is like when you go to like Six Flags and they have like you're waiting in line to get on the Batman ride and they make you walk through all of Gotham City.
Yeah.
That's like IKEA. Like
you're
there's
right.
No shortcut. Yeah. You need to walk
you
through the
walk
whole
through.
Fucking
you
place.
You do, dude. You have to walk through the whole fucking place. Yes.
Before you fight a crime, why not stop and marvel at the docks?
There's a cognitive bias. According to Reddit and Wikipedia, there's a thing called the IKEA effect. The IKEA effect, and it's a cognitive bias that occurs when consumers place a disproportionately high value on products that they partially create. The name derives from the Swedish manufacturer and furniture dealer IKEA, which sells many furniture products that require assembly. Now, for those of you that don't know, a cognitive bias is a pattern of deviation in judgment whereby inferences about people or situations may be drawn to illogical conclusions. So
basically... what they're saying here is that if you had a hand in building something, if you had something that's like some assembly required, you feel more of a connection to that. You place higher value on it. So you build your crappy $20 bookcase, but you're like, well, I'm going to hold on to this forever because I had to put this together, and that was such a pain in the ass. I had to spend blood, sweat, tears,
I had to take an
time.
Allen wrench and foreign fucking instructions
exactly,
to figure this fucking
thing out. Like a little editorial cartoon of a guy like, how do you put this together? that makes sense. I get that.
Yeah. Well, that was pretty interesting. I mean, it's kind of like – it's essentially kind of like, if you have a boss or whatever and he doesn't like your idea that you bring him, but he's got a shitty idea and he likes his idea better.
Yeah.
That type of a
– you also have written down here a sort of tangential to this IKEA effect. It's called the well-traveled road
this
effect.
This is an interesting effect.
And this is something that happens to me all the time in L.A. because you have to drive around pretty much every waking minute here. It is the underestimation of how long it takes to – travel on very often traveled routes, and then you overestimate how long it takes to take less traveled routes. So you'd be more willing to take a place that's going to be riddled with traffic because you've taken it before and you know where it goes and you know it connects you from point A to point B than by taking maybe a bunch of surface streets or cutting around it. And it makes sense. It makes sense. You're used to taking the routes that you know.
I'll tell you what, this happens to me so fucking much in this town, is you take the routes you know. and it's like you're teleporting because you're so used to driving a certain route that you don't even pay attention to where you're
right.
going. And next thing you know, you're where you're supposed to be, and you don't remember
anything. Can't recall
anything.
A fucking thing. Yeah. Yeah. I do that a lot in the morning when I get up and drive, too. I just blank. I drive by feel, and then I'm like, I don't remember the last nine exits.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't even fucking think of the sign or anything.
No.
I've been using, and I don't know if they're a sponsor or not, but I've been using the Waze app. Do you guys use that?
We don't.
I've used it before.
Dude, let me tell you something. It is a lifesaver in Los Angeles.
Really?
It's shaved 20 minutes one way off of each commute. And the other thing I really like about it is I like to move. Even if I'm going to be 40 minutes in bumper to bumper or 40 minutes moving, I'd rather fucking move.
Yeah.
And it'll take you... and a lot of places like FedEx and UPS, I believe, do this where they're engineered to make right turns only because they're safer.
Yeah.
And it'll try to do that for you as best it can. So Waze has been really fucking awesome to check out. Plus, there's other routes on there, too. So you don't have to take the most travel.
Like, it gives you some options.
Yeah. And you can find new ways. Like when I first moved to Los Angeles, I was a runner just early on. And I would always ask,
as well, for like, a visual effects company.
There you go. Yeah. So I would work for post companies, and I was like, well, does this need to be there right away? And they'd be like, no, you can take your time with this one. I never used a Thomas guide. If they told me I could take my time, I would just go a different way.
Rack up the mileage.
Rack up the mileage. And then I'd be like, oh, I'm at fucking Sunset. I know where I'm at now.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, that made it that way. So I've learned a lot of little byways.
When I first moved here, I just printed out a stack of resumes. I would choose a neighborhood and just drive around it and like walk around and explore. And that's honestly been the best way. Like, unplug your GPS if you have time. Just take a drive, explore. You'll figure it out. You'll get home eventually.
If you're new to any city, I mean, this for Los Angeles, this implies to us. But if you're out there and you're moving into any city, don't use your GPS. Don't use your phone. If you're going to look up where you need to go before you leave your house, then just go on an adventure because that's the best way to learn every route in your city. I also, when I first moved out here, I worked at a visual effects company as like a runner, and I delivered so many things. And that's how I learned my way around the town is just by driving. You know, that's the only way, the best way you can learn how to get to and from places and vicinities and parts of town. And the next thing you know, you start going into close vicinities and you're like, holy cow, these are right next to each other when you don't really realize that because not all of Los Angeles is on a grid system. There's a lot of slants and souths and angular streets.
But if you're half decent within directions in Los Angeles, you're pretty set. I mean, you pass something, just go around a block, and you're coming right back around to it.
You might get turned around, but then just carry a compass.
Yeah.
There's only four directions you can go, and all streets lead to the same place, essentially.
Yeah. El Pollo Loco. You mentioned bumper-to-bumper traffic, another staple of Los Angeles. And I actually read something really interesting about this recently. A guy on Reddit who is he's a truck driver. He drives a big rig. He posted this video explaining this phenomenon, but I also read a little bit more about it. All traffic is caused by a combination of braking and lane changes. One guy way down the road, like miles ahead,
that asshole,
can cause a ripple effect that will lead to huge traffic jams way back. Because everyone's always trying to ride each other's butt. They're trying to tailgate.
Yeah.
And that causes people to brake more, and that makes everyone else. It ripples back.
I hate
braking
so much.
So leave 1 to 2 car lengths, and you don't always need to change lane. I know it feels like you're making progress. I am very guilty of this myself. You know, it's always like, how can I get one car ahead? But, think about it. Anytime you've been stuck in just horrendous traffic, that's because everyone else in front of you is
Yeah, but
braking.
Even so, if somebody cuts in front of you, don't slam on your brakes. Just take your
feet
off the fucking
foot
pedal.
Off
speed
the
up
gas.
And let
you.
Off the fucking
you don't
coast.
Always need to hit the brakes.
Grab
you can just just take your foot off the accelerator.
Your
it will
car
slow
is,
your car down.
Your car is thousands of pounds with gravity. It'll slow down. It will slow down. And just because you see somebody 5 cars ahead slam on their brakes, don't even just coast. It upsets me so many times when I see people slam on the brakes because then it's like, all right, well, if everybody's slamming on their brakes, eventually I'm going to need to slam on my brakes.
Right.
Then I'm going to have to step on the gas again and accelerate. And it's just that's you would save so much more gas if you just didn't have to accelerate every fucking time.
That's why I only drive downhill.
That's when you turn the car on.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've been in traffic where I'm like, there must be six dead bodies spread across the fuck. And then you get there and it's like nothing.
It's like you see like an old boot on the side of the road.
It's like an 82 Datsun with its hazards on. I'm like, just change the oil on it, man. That's all you need to do. Basic car maintenance.
Is it wrong that anytime I'm in that situation, I think to myself, somebody motherfucking have died. Somebody better be dead and somebody better be learning a lesson right now. I hope to God somebody's learning a valuable lesson right now.
At least you want a takeaway.
Like, here's the thing. If I'm going to have to deal with this, somebody better be learning something. That's so mean, but it's kind of like it is what it is.
Speaking of learning a lesson, we've been taught, at least I was taught for much of my life, that when you get cut, a cut or a scrape or something, it's best to let it air out a little bit. You don't want to cover it up with a bandage. It'll heal faster if you leave it out. That is actually not true, according to a New York Times health article published in 2006. Apparently, exposing a wound to air so it can breathe creates a dry environment that promotes cell death. So your body's trying to repair itself, and by exposing it to air, you're drying it out and making it worse as a result. A handful of studies found that when wounds are kept moist or covered, blood vessels will regenerate faster. The number of cells that cause inflammation drop more rapidly than they would in wounds that are allowed to air out. So it's best to keep your wound moist and covered, they say, for at least 5 days.
Five days.
I guess that probably varies depending on the severity and size of the wound. Like, if you get a paper cut, you probably don't need to cover that for 5 days.
Tough enough.
But, say you fall off your bike or something, that might be a good piece of advice.
They also say that removing scabs isn't a bad thing.
Well, yeah, they're breaking the union lines.
Puns and smart jokes. Hey. Today we learn.
Pinkerton's not just a Weezer album.
Removing scabs, as gross as it sounds, is actually a good thing because scabs tend to leave. The longer a scab matures, the better chance it has of scarring and leaving a big big tissue scar. So if you're starting to get a small scab, peel that away and it'll kind of help.
So if you don't want a sweet scar, then pick your scabs.
I'm all about, here's another one, Neosporin. Like that is, I swear, I think if you did get your leg cut off, you could probably put it back on.
Neosporin, a little bit.
I'm sure they wouldn't recommend it, but I think if you put some fucking Neosporin on and just tape it up, you might be all right.
Warning, leg reattachment simulated.
Neosporin is something else, man. That shit.
Last words. Just put some Neosporin on it.
Yeah, just put some sporin on it.
When we were in middle school, we had a health nurse who was, politely I'll say, she was visually not the picture of health that you would think at all. Yeah. Just a very bizarre lady. Yeah. And the room was full of maxi pads and bacitracin. That was it. Do you remember Bacitracin? That's all she would say. Yeah. No matter what you fucking walked in, if you weren't just having your first period, then it was just put some fucking Bacitracin. I'm like, what the fuck is that shit gonna do?
Yeah,
it's just like a thick salve that you can fucking put in there.
Put some creams on it. You'll be good.
Yeah, wait till Neosporin comes out, bitch. You're going to be out of business.
Game changer. I have distinct memories. My high school nurse, I think she would just give you a mint and send you on your way.
That's all they do. What are you qualified for?
Put that in your mouth and suck it up already.
Yeah, right? Do you even know first aid?
Yeah, I know.
It's like third aid right now.
I only got to first. I left before the aid portion of the class.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So let your scabs, because I just have this one that's, it's been about a month and it's, I didn't pick it. This is the one I didn't pick. I did leave it uncovered, but I also doused that shit in Neosporin.
Yeah, I think the sporin should, as we've established, counteract any ill effects. So
this podcast is brought to you by Neosporin.
Brought to you by Neosporin, a Johnson & Johnson product.
Neosporin and Waze. Now, how do you spell that Waze? Is it Waze?
W-A-Z-E.
Correct.
And that's a Google thing, right?
I don't know if it's Google, to be honest with
you. It's just W-A-Z-E.
That's it. W-A-Z-E, and it just gives you different ways, they spelled creatively, to get around your location.
Okay. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I think it might have something to do with Google. I'm trying to...
If it doesn't now, it probably will in the next couple of hours.
Yeah, exactly. Just plucks down from the sky, buys it.
Here's a food fact.
Food fact.
Now, I don't drink. Dan drinks. Last week we were talking about wine. Do you drink? Drink alcohol?
A little bit.
You did a crab feasting.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I drink some beers.
Here's a. There's a drink a mixed drink that's getting popular in Spain called Calimotazo. If I pronounce that correctly.
I think Calimotzo or something. Calimotxo.
Also known as Cocovino.
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 In certain parts of town. Cocovino.
West Hollywood is...
Just over the hill there.
Over the hill is Cocovino. It's a drink consisting of equal parts red wine and cola-based soft drink. So it's essentially a mixed drink. Where
it's wine and Coke.
Yeah.
I watched an Anthony Bourdain, one of his TV shows. It was like No Reservations, or it was a new one on CNN. And he was at a street fair, and they were just gripping and sipping on these Cocovinos. Huh. I've heard it's pretty good. I heard it's better than
you expect.
Coke,
like a dark cola, not like a like you put soda water, seltzer water, and like a sangria,
like actual Coca-Cola, not like soda or
and
tonic.
Red wine.
Yeah, and red wine. So get your nice Cabernet, get
equal
your nice
parts,
Coke.
Now, how could you make that into boxed wine? How do you just open up the bag?
You pour it in a pouch.
It's the first wine in a can, man.
Yeah, I think they do have some canned wines.
There has to be.
Yeah,
right.
There has to be.
They've got everything, so why not? They make like adult juice box wine now.
Yeah. About time.
Yeah, I mean, people are clamoring.
They need to start making, like, Capri Suns, individual wine.
Do they have those? Yeah, they got
those.
Come on. They even got some for, like, here's sangria.
I'm behind.
Here's, like, mojitos.
You just pop a pouch and go?
Yeah, pretty much. And glurp.
They need to make them... They need to make them look like they're actual juice boxes, though, so that we can drink them out in public.
Right, yeah.
Like, they need to make it obvious.
Like,
need
kids'
to,
colors
yeah,
and
make
shit.
It in, like yeah. silver.
Right.
Like
a ruler on it or something. It must be education.
That's my biggest issue with Boost. They don't disguise their stuff as kids' stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't see Jameson putting like a friendly
cigarettes
little,
do
like a friendly leprechaun on the front.
Cigarettes fucking
yeah,
do Camel
got,
Joe and all
that
good that. Stuff. Yeah,
yeah. I remember growing up just seeing all the Newport ads. They'd always just have like the hottest people having the best time.
Yeah, black
like,
people on yachts.
Yeah,
and shit.
Like
what
they
the
look like they're having a great day.
Yeah, they're killing
Newport's
themselves.
Must have changed their life.
somebody needs to make white Russians in bottles that look like it's just like quick Nesquik.
Oh, they have some other stuff.
He's like, listen, they have that.
There's something called adult chocolate milk. It is 14% ABV chocolate milk.
Really?
Alcoholic whipped cream.
Oh, that's
AKA
amazing.
It's already loaded
fuel.
Up.
That's amazing.
Sorority fuel.
I don't know if that's the official name, but that's what I'm going to call it.
Sorority fuel. Sounds like there's some mistakes making there.
Yeah.
I'm on board.
Mistakes in every can.
I'm on board. Well, we're talking about food, I guess. So here's some fun facts about ketchup.
Yeah.
In the 17th century, the Chinese... Now, Dan will be able to pronounce these because Dan's... knows how to speak all those weird languages. In the 17th century, the Chinese mixed a concoction of pickled fish and spices and called it...
This is apparently from an Amoy dialect, not my specialty.
Okay.
Kochap or ketchup.
Okay. There we go.
Yeah. So
well
yeah.
done. Do you like
Thank
speak
you.
Mandarin fluently or
no,
anything?
No, I studied
like I'm Cantonese.
I used to, I studied Japanese back in college,
oh, you did?
So I have a basis. But yeah. I'm not sure exactly. You can, listeners out there, you can feel free to correct me on my pronunciation of this Amoy dialect.
But by the early 18th century, the table sauce had made it to the Malay states, present-day Malaysia and Singapore, where it was discovered by English explorers. Now, many variations of ketchup were created, but the tomato-based version did not appear until about a century after the other types. By 1801, a recipe for tomato ketchup was created by Sandy Addison and was later printed in an American cookbook, The Sugar House Book. So ketchup is really still relatively new when you in the grand scheme of things, 1800s, early 1800s, late 17th century.
Now I will ask you, do you eat ketchup? Do you like ketchup, or you're not a ketchup person?
I enjoy ketchup, and I found that I am in something of a minority amongst my friends. I was pretty surprised at the amount of people that don't care for it.
Huh? I would feel like ketchup would be condiment number one.
Yeah, exactly. With a bullet.
I prefer barbecue sauce. I'm a huge barbecue
Interesting.
Sauce.
There you go.
Yeah.
I love barbecue sauce.
But now if you're going to do ketchup.
Would you have ketchup? Are you right. like, are you?
Oh, yeah.
And if you're going to have it, is it Heinz or is it Hunt's?
Heinz.
Thank you. Go
Hashtag
fuck yourself, Hunt's.
Hunt's
not a sponsor of the podcast.
No, Hunt's, you will never sponsor this podcast unless you're interested in which
Dodger
case,
Stadium has Hunt's. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? What are you doing?
Exactly. It's the kind of thing where it's like, you know, they paid enough money to get Heinz out. But meanwhile, Heinz is probably in every other stadium.
Every other stadium.
Hunt's is just like not only does the name sound stupid, but the logo and everything, it looks like it was manufactured as like a fake catch up for a movie.
Yeah, it totally does.
It seems like when you
like
think
it was
of
a middle school kid's like project to come up with a label, and they're like, "This is
like,
wrong."
We need to have ketchup in this episode, but we can't pay the Heinz royalty fees.
Yeah. So we're just gonna make Hunts.
We can't pay. Got to blur it out.
Yeah. It's like whatever people, like, you have Mad Men, and then you have, like, Mad Men's on Madison Avenue, then you got the company that's on, like, 42nd Street, like, from a boutique office.
I read, there's a couple things. You probably know this. There's one of the things I've learned years ago, though, that was I still use to this day is my twin brother's girlfriend at the time years ago was a waitress, and she's the one that taught me the hitting the bottle on the 57.
Oh yeah,
you know that little trick.
Yeah,
hold on,
that's
what?
So on the glass bottles of Heinz that you get, I don't even know if they put them in restaurants anymore, to be honest with you. But the glass bottle where it was so thick you couldn't get it, and you put a butter knife in there or whatever.
Yeah.
But around the top of the bottle, there's a 57 imprinted all the way around it, and it's the pressure point. So if you just tap it with the heel of your hand in that spot, it will flow out fine. You don't have to stick shit up there, and you know.
And it's on the side of it.
It's on. It's where the neck of the bottle ends, and the bigger base. I don't know. I'm not a bottle expert
by
any means.
It's on the it's a 57 circle on the neck to indicate 57 varieties.
Yeah.
And that's because ketchup, tomato ketchup, has an additive called xanthan gum, which makes it a little bit more viscous.
Viscous.
Yeah, it makes it thicker, more, you know.
Can I tell you how many times I've told people my ketchup is way too viscous?
Yeah, it's the
number.
Back when I was working at a restaurant, it was the number one complaint.
But it's also,
what's the viscosity on this?
What is this?
It's also, I don't know, I can't recall the scientific term, but if I remember correctly, the ketchup, when it's in such a confined space, it's thicker than when it is actually out in the open.
Yeah, so there's a word for shaking it or tapping it, that reduces the viscosity through something called shearing force or shear thinning.
Yeah. It's kind of like how, like, taffy is a hard taffy. When you slam it against the counter, it'll break. But if you pull it, it's very malleable. Whereas, like, when you, like, ketchup, it's kind of the same type of principle, different scientific physics, but when it's together, it's thicker.
Yeah. With ketchup, basically, the faster you tap it or shake it, the more fluid it becomes, and then after it gets out of the bottle, it regains its normal viscosity and texture.
It's like the old adage, you can shake and shake the ketchup bottle, none will come, then a lottle.
Yes, I believe it was the famed philosopher Aristotle who said that.
I've also read, and for whatever reason, I don't know why, but NASA has done studies on the flow rate of ketchup.
Interesting. Well, probably to make sure
flow
how different different substances and fluids and all that interact in space.
There was there was an astronaut, a Canadian astronaut, who was up in space last year.
Chris Hadfield.
Yeah, he would do live like videos from space, and he'd be like, you could ask him questions, and he would do like physics experiments and everything about water and everything.
He also He also did the dopest cover of David Bowie's Space Oddity because he was actually in space.
And was he playing? He was playing it.
He was playing the guitar, and he changed the lyrics a little bit
great.
To be less about like heroin and all that, more about the majesty of being in space.
Space is so interesting. To me,
yeah, it's the final frontier.
So cool. Yeah,
it is. Have you seen Gravity?
Dude, I have.
So great. Good.
I really enjoyed it.
I quite enjoyed it as well.
I mean, if you're a suspense and thriller fan,
it was not my favorite movie of the year, but I think it is the most technically impressive movie.
That
of the
was.
Year.
You're right. The whole circling of the junk coming back, I never even considered. I'm like, oh yeah, that shit's gonna orbit and come right the fuck back.
Yeah, like slingshot.
Yeah. That's one thing, like, there was a picture, somebody posted a picture, it may have been Brady Matthews, a comedian, I'm sure you remember. I don't know, I can't remember who did it, but somebody retweeted a picture of one of those, you know, those science porn graphs on the internet or whatever, where it's got the globe of the Earth, and then it has just a bunch of red dots, and it's like, these are all the satellites currently orbiting Earth. And it's very interesting to think about, how much shit is orbiting the Earth, just constantly around.
He was like, go over to that. Oh, that's China's over there. Get over there. I was like, no shit. I had no idea. Yeah, everyone has stations out there.
And for a nominal fee, you can also launch your own satellite into orbit if you have the wherewithal to build one. I was
for real?
Yeah, I'm dead serious. There's this group of people out of Florida. Nerdist did a little piece with them. They wanted to, for celebration of Doctor Who's 50th anniversary, they are making a little TARDIS
the telephone police police box that he uses to travel through time. They made that into a satellite. They're going to launch it into orbit with people are allowed to, depending on how much they donated to Kickstarter, they're allowed to put some data on there, a message, stuff like that. So it'll just be a little floating archive.
So and, how do you send it up? Do you attach it to like an actual NASA rocket?
Yeah, I think you attach it to a rocket. I don't know what size. You know, it depends on the size of the satellite, obviously. But they were able to, with the money they raised, they were able to finance the production of the satellite and able to work with this company that'll launch it up there with a rocket. So
and then
so.
You just let it go and yeah. That's it.
Exactly.
That's, so it could get blown to pieces.
It could get blown to pieces, but they have sensors and stuff, so it they can communicate with it and like keep track of like hopefully where it is.
Why don't we just send all of our garbage up into space?
Because yeah. Then it's going to turn into some sort of crazy like super asteroid and just fucking wipe out a planet that'll then come back at us. That, there's nothing good that can happen from that.
Unless we're just, like a diaper asteroid just coming down and covering our Earth and shit.
Yeah, exactly. We should just all move to the garbage island in the Pacific.
Jay Larson is very big on Trash Island right
Trash
now.
Island.
Actually, there's more than one, I believe he told me. There's two.
Hold on. They're opening another one because the first one was so popular.
I don't know what this is, so inform me about
there
this Trash
is,
Island.
Yeah, let me
there's an island that floats in our oceans on our planet here that is full of plastic bottles, diaper, trash, garbage, and it's called Trash Island.
The Great Pacific Garbage Patch or the Pacific Trash Vortex.
There you go. And I believe that he tells me there's more than one now. He's, you know, he's getting ready to have a baby in March, and right now he's like, I don't want to use diapers, and I'm like, yeah, one diarrhea, that'll fucking take
yeah, right, like,
your cloth diaper shit's going out. It's going, out. It's going right in Trash Island.
Welcome to the future, buddy.
Let your kid worry about the environment.
Well, I see, and now I told him.
So we put this there, or does it all just accumulate because of pollution?
Humans have put this there, yes.
Yeah.
It's all been done. I don't know, I understand now what you're saying. I don't know if it's a run, if someone's overseeing this.
It is, it's not, there's no manager, there's no governor of Trash Island.
Trash Island manager.
No one's elected mayor of Heapsville. Basically, it's a concentrated pile of marine debris that has been gathered in one central location through oceanic currents.
Okay.
So, you know, stuff falling off ships over the years, like, you know, just litter, all sorts of stuff. Yeah. Just eventually all funnels to this location.
So it's stagnant. I mean, it doesn't move. It doesn't float around those.
Yeah, it's located in what's called the...
Where is it, actually?
It is located in the central North Pacific Ocean in a place called the North Pacific Gyre, G-Y-R-E. I hope
is it visible on Google Earth?
Yes.
It is. Oh, yeah, awesome. It's very visible. It's big. Did they say what's the landmass of it, actually?
Let me see if it says here. It's horrific is what it is.
It's big.
Honey, where are we going on our cruise?
I got a round trip. Take us to Trash Island.
Estimates of size. Oh, my God.
I mean...
Estimates of size range from 700,000 square kilometers to more than 15 million square kilometers.
So why doesn't someone... Like, if
so they say it's between 0.41% and 8.1% the size of the Pacific Ocean.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's fucking huge.
It's not like we can't set it on fire.
Yeah.
You know, because you fuck the atmosphere
exactly.
up and set it on fire. Can't just burn all that plastic up in there.
We just need to get a bunch of Greenpeace dudes. Do something important. Go recycle that shit.
Yeah.
Do something worthwhile.
Let's put all the homeless that want to recycle plastic out on Trash Island. Let them pick it all up.
All the
fly
people,
them back.
All the people coming by my trash in the morning.
Yeah.
Too.
Let them go out there and have at it.
Yeah.
Then we'll fly them back.
This only applies to homeless in states where you can get money back for redeeming your glass bottles.
CRV, yeah.
Yeah, we don't want to mislead hobos across the country.
I told Larson that I always hear people say, you know, let's leave a better planet for our children. Let's leave a better planet for our children. And the one I heard the other day, which made so much sense to me also, is let's leave better children for our planet.
Yeah.
You know, let's start there.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to clean up the mess we have, let's clean up the mess we have in the thought process of doing that, and then maybe, you know, somewhere down the line, maybe their great great grandkids will have a better world than we do.
Plus, kids are a renewable resource. You can always make more.
You can make more kids.
Yeah.
That's right. Kid Island, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know about it. It's out in Atlanta.
They did something like that. There was a reality show like that called, like, Kid Island. I think they had to shut it down because kids got injured left and right. Like, what happens if kids who are in a society with no adults, they're going to get injured? They're kids.
They're kids.
They're
small
children.
No, I think if everybody teaches the kids to, you know, to live for the environment or work, you know, like my brother has an electric car. He's got an all-electric Leaf in Michigan. He's got a little kid who's going to be turning after this episode
Leaf.
Airs.
Who, is that Nissan?
Nissan.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen
after
that
this airs, I think he just turned 4. And he's, you know, he's teaching his kid about, you know, like science and technology type of stuff like that, to where by the time he's our age, you know, he should, you know, if most children at age 4 right now can learn about being proactive and working towards the future, the environment should do should be doing pretty well.
And that starts with tapping your bottle of ketchup on the 57, on, the 57. On its neck.
So. It better be Heinz. Yeah. If it's plastic ketchup, Hunt's, throw it in the trash.
Yeah, you want to teach your kid about viscosity.
Well, now just think of all the styrofoam that was used from fast food restaurants back in the day.
Fuck.
I mean, that alone. So, you know, it seems to be getting cut down. I don't like. It's funny to me because my fiance son always say, Ryan, that should go in the trash. That doesn't go in the recycle. I'm like, what the fuck isn't recyclable these days?
Yeah,
yeah.
Seriously, what can't I throw in the recycle
bin
anymore?
You cannot recycle pizza boxes, but I mean,
that's all cardboard. How can you not?
It's something about the grease from the pizza on the cardboard compromises the integrity of it. I don't know the specifics. I remember reading it was specifically because of the grease from the pizza that it absorbs. That makes it ineligible for
so
many.
Don't throw my pizza boxes in the recycle bin anymore.
Throw your pizza boxes in the trash because they can't recycle
or send them in a, send them with a self-addressed stamped envelope to Trash Island.
Mayor of Trash Island.
This I'm gonna be honest, I'm going to look severely into this Trash Island. This is intriguing me.
I mean, we're calling it Trash Island, but you really said what the name
was.
The
Great Pacific Garbage Patch, which isn't
I
much
like Trash
better.
Island better.
Trash Island's a bit sexier. like Sandals Trash Island is going to open soon.
Sexier. Sandals has an all-inclusive
resort. What did you say? The Great Pacific Garbage Patch?
Great Pacific Garbage Patch.
Great Pacific Garbage Patch. That sounds GPP. Like that sounds like a Charlie Brown episode.
It does,
Charlie
right?
Brown goes to the Great Pacific Garbage Patch.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Charlie Brown. Life is terrible.
Here's a completely random, everything on this podcast is random, obviously, but here's a weird, interesting fact for you guys. Xylophones only have wood bars. Their metal counterparts, I said metal, interesting, I said it weird there, but anyways, their metal counterparts are called glockenspiels and are usually smaller and have a higher pitch. So xylophones are actually only made with
that's
wood.
Interesting.
The metal ones are glockenspiels.
I'm curious where stuff
struck
like the
with
marimba.
A wooden mallet also.
Yeah.
Wood on wood.
Wood on wood.
Wood on wood crime.
So a marimba has a set of wooden bars that technically makes it a xylophone, correct?
Yeah. Correct.
I guess they're all, you know, they're percussion instruments. I wonder how that if that's like, you know, all squares are rectangles, but all rectangles.
Yeah.
I'm butchering that. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Because then there are xylophones where they're like hollow wooden cylindricals versus just the wooden bar. So I wonder what is that called? I wonder.
Here's a totally weird, unsubstantiated fact that I found on this website, QI.com. And I was looking for more. I Googled it and I couldn't find anything else. There's nothing on the website, just this one sentence. But take it as you will. The appearance of a golfer in a painting can add 50% to its value.
Come on.
I don't know why or how they just wrote it as their fact of the day with no, like, click here to read more. Like,
that's some shit that was like, come on, man, it's half day today. Just put something
down.
Yeah,
like,
just put something down.
Exactly.
Get the fuck out of here.
A bowl of fruit. This would be much better if they had a golfer swinging a sweet 3-wood in the
50%?
Background. 50%? As much as 50% to its value simply by adding a golfer to your painting.
What the fuck?
Right?
I mean, first you have to be a painter.
I guess you're thinking, I guess here's the only way I can logic that out. People who belong to country clubs have a lot of money. People have a lot of money buy art. People who buy art don't necessarily know what they want. They want to get something they like. They see a golfer in the painting. They're willing to pay more. Yeah. I golf as well.
Here's the thing. And if you want to add 100% value to your painting.
Add 2 golfers.
Paint 2 golfers on felt.
Yeah.
Are felt paintings worth velvet?
Not felt.
So the dogs playing poker would have gone up 50% if they just would have slotted a golfer in one of the chairs.
If one of them had a 9 iron.
If one of the dogs
instead of
was
an ace.
If the dog was dressed up like a golfer.
Yeah.
If the dog was dressed up like Payne Stewart, that painting would be worth millions.
Yeah, so sorry art dealers of the world if that's wrong, but don't take it up with me. Take it up at QI.com.
Here's something interesting. My brother was telling me about this. a phenomenon called synesthesia. And it's a neurological phenomenon in which stimulation of one sensory or cognitive pathway leads to automatic, involuntary experiences in a second sensory or cognitive pathway. Basically, it enhances your different senses. So, like, when you read words, if you have this, when you read words, the letters will appear in different colors. And when you see numbers, yeah, it'll be in colors. Or if
you ever hear about people who can, like, taste sounds, or they can, like, oh, that's purple, that has a sour taste. Their two senses are getting – the signals are getting mashed together and creating this weird
– So when I say I have purple cool or purple Kool-Aid or purple Gatorade, that's happening to me because it's actually a false grape flavor.
Not quite. It's like if you saw the color purple and tasted Gatorade.
I actually watched The Color Purple while drinking Gatorade.
Yeah, well, that's about as close as us normies can get.
Okay, so wait, if I...
You should also try Powerade and Lee Daniels the Butler. Like,
I saw the Butler. Fantastic move.
In one of the most common forms of synesthesia, grapheme, color synesthesia, individual letters of the alphabet and numbers, collectively referred to as graphemes, are shaded or tinged with a color. So, like, if you see, like, a 5... If you see the number 5, it might appear yellowish. Or if you see the letter A, it's likely to be red.
I think if you've seen Homeland, Claire Danes' character, at the end of it, she's associating these different pieces of evidence with different colors, and that she has bipolar. She's bipolar in that, I believe. But I think it seems like she's experiencing some form of synesthesia. Okay. She's like, Abu Nazir, big bad guy, he's purple. We got to follow the purple. So it's just, they process things in different ways. I heard a really phenomenal piece about this on NPR. I can't remember where or what, but I think if you just Google NPR synesthesia, you'll probably find it, where they talked to a guy from the UK who has this, and he was explaining how he goes through his everyday life and how it's like it can be really overwhelming sometimes if he's in public because he just has all these different stimuli, like tastes and flavors, and just, yeah. So like, check it out.
A lot of like entertainers like Pharrell Williams, the rapper
from producer, NERD,
from that, he was on that
the Neptunes,
Billy Joel, Duke Ellington,
Jeffrey Rush,
they have it where like Pharrell Williams says chromesthesia, where when you hear sounds or music or anything, you see colors. So that way, a lot of like producers and composers have it or had it, and that way, you know, they almost know if the song they're composing is beautiful by the colors that they hear and they see in their brain. Almost like back in the 70s, they had those like those boxes that like when
it's they, like they have a built-in iTunes visualizer.
Yeah, yes, that's exactly what I'm thinking, what I'm looking up. It's an iTunes visualizer. When you hear music or sounds, your brain has like weird
their
colors.
Their brain
fireworks.
Is like the fountain at the Grove.
Yeah,
that's specifically for you LA listeners. They have a musical fountain there.
I'm a bit of a Hendrix freak, and I've read a bunch about him working with his mixer, Eddie Kramer, and he would say that all the time, this is blue. It's blue, and Eddie Kramer would know exactly what the fuck he was talking about, and he's like, you're the only guy that gets what I'm saying. Like, I hear green, I see green here, so I never knew that.
That's interesting. Yeah, on the Wikipedia page I was reading, Hendrix was listed on there.
Oh, great.
And my brother was telling me, when he was telling me about this, I don't know if he listened to NPR, or I can't remember what he heard it on, but he heard, and he was reading a story about a young girl who had it, and she was driving in a car with her family one time, and she's like, oh, fives are red, and her dad's like, reddish. And like she's like, oh, you know, and Q's are this, or you know, twos are yellow, and her dad's like, yep, twos are yellow, and like her sister and her brother are like, what the hell are you guys talking about? Because they didn't have it, but the mom and the dad and the daughter both had it. So kind of like Kramer and Hendrix, they both knew what they were, you know, because they had this phenomenon. It's like a superpower, and like my brother was saying, what he was listening on, everybody's enjoying it, and I was like, obviously, who would not want this? Why would you not want to be able to look at numbers?
Especially if you're in the creative field.
Yeah,
you would think that would benefit you.
Well, I can see, though, how it could get very overwhelming, especially if you're like out in public. Like, think if you were at a music festival, you'd lose your fucking mind. Like,
yeah, that's a good
there'd be
point,
no
actually.
Way you would be not so much was, to process.
Not if it was good music. Just don't do drugs.
Yeah, you let your brain do the work.
Let your brain do the work. It's almost like you wonder if. If you donate blood, if when somebody gets your blood, if they get that.
Getting what you get?
Yeah.
That'd
be
badass, actually.
That'd be fucking awesome.
Well, while we're on the subject of sound, this is sort of tangentially related. Owls. The feathers around an owl's eyes are called a facial disc, and they can be used to they can be adjusted to filter sound toward their ears. So basically,
that's,
you know,
amazing.
How, yeah, you know, yeah, how when like you put your iPhone or something into a cup to magnify the sound? It's the same principle, sort of like, you know, they adjust it to sort of filter the sound better, like whatever direction it's coming from towards their ears. Which is,
owls are amazing, and yeah, just fucking in general.
They like, tell you about how many licks it takes to get to the center of Tootsie Pops.
Owls amaze me, and hummingbirds amaze me.
Hummingbirds, yeah.
Yeah.
Hummingbirds just, like, I just wish, like, if I was a billionaire, I would do a lot of things, but I would really try. Like, I wish there were bigger hummingbirds.
A that, bigger size?
That'd like, be how terrifying.
Like, it would be.
Like, I go hiking every once in a while. I'll go hiking. There's the Baldwin Hills overlook, a bunch of stairs by my house, and there's hummingbirds everywhere over there. And they're just so fast and just like they blow my mind. Like, they're, like, I'm never, like, they just, they excite me because they're just a small little creature going so fast and so free in the environment. It's really cool.
Well, you know, here's something I just learned this year, actually, about how to draw them is just sugar water.
Yeah.
A friend of mine has a house in Palm Springs, and he used to have hummingbird feeders up, and okay, they were still coming around nonstop. And I'm like, what is up? He's like, I used to have feeders up there, and they're looking for them. And I was like, what do you put to attract hummingbirds? And he's like, just sugar water. And they fucking come in droves.
Dude, I'm going to put one on my porch.
It's so simple. Just put one on your porch. Hang it up, and they'll come around all the time. They are pretty badass. They're beautiful.
Like, I just...
And you can see their wings beating. You're like, holy shit, man.
So fast.
You're getting some work out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're just, like, not moving. They're just staying in place, or they're, you know, they, like... It's almost like in the Matrix, or like almost type of like a Minority Report or something, where you're in a virtual reality and you can just put anything, you can like grab a ball and just put it anywhere and it'll like sit there like jello or whatever. And hummingbirds can just do that flying around.
Yeah.
So fucking amazing.
Beautiful little birds.
Yeah.
The only thing to watch out for with your hummingbird feeders is that they can also attract bees, wasps, and ants because of the sugar water. Because you're basically just recreating nectar is what you're doing with that.
I was worried about just hummingbird shit all over the place.
Yeah.
But I don't
I feel
see
like
it.
They shit at such a high speed it just evaporates.
Their wing bats it away somewhere.
It's like, just goes straight up, launched into space.
Wasn't there a movie where, was it, I feel like there was a movie where the shit was like a magical, oh, it was a, was that the Envy with Jack Black and Ben Stiller?
Oh, yeah.
They sprayed stuff and shit and it would disappear. I was just thinking
for your dog shit on your lawn or something, right? Yeah.
I was just thinking about like hummingbird shit is magical.
Yeah, if you could spray hummingbirds and make them disappear.
If you eat hummingbird shit, you can run faster.
That is not a fact. For those of you at home, please consume that at your own.
But try it.
Yeah. Try it. That's awesome. Here's an interesting fact. Speaking of things that are flying, hummingbirds are flying. and music, it's a the term Foo Fighter was used by Allied aircraft pilots in World War II to describe various UFOs or mysterious aerial phenomena seen in the skies over both the European and Pacific theater operations. Though Foo Fighter initially described a type of UFO reported and named by the U.S., 415th Night Fighter Squadron, the term was also commonly used to mean any UFO sighting from that period.
Interesting. So, yeah, but, you know, that makes sense because there was a lot of covert development of
from like
different technologies, like rocket technology in particular was very big back then because it was just starting to come out of Germany.
Yeah.
So from November 1944 onward, you know, they assumed that these were secret weapons being employed and produced by the enemy, so they needed some sort of protocol and procedure to deal with them.
Yeah, really interesting. And in January of 1953, the Robertson panel as a special convened government panel to formulate UFO policy explored possible explanations. For instance, they were electrostatic phenomena similar to St. Elmo's fire. Now, here's something. I have always heard St. Elmo's fire, and I never really knew what it was. I thought it was like a
it was a long run.
I
thought
it was like wasn't it a Rob Lowe movie?
Yeah.
Demi Moore.
It was with the Brat Pack. One of the
Sorry,
I was thinking of St. Elsewhere.
Right.
My
St. Elsewhere was with Howie Mandel, and St. Elsewhere was at a hospital that ended up being in like a mental patient's.
It was a 1985 American coming of age film. Yeah.
Did Quincy come out of St. Elsewhere? Was Quincy a spinoff of St. Elsewhere, or was just Quincy?
I don't know.
Was off of St. Elsewhere.
Wasn't he a St. Elsewhere doctor or something?
I think he was, if I remember, because I know St. Elsewhere had a spinoff show.
I feel like it.
Which, the spinoff show, they kind of had to rework it because the whole concept of St. Elsewhere
was
that
team,
it was,
right?
Was, the kid's imagination in the
snow.
Oh,
that's right. That's right. The globe. Yes. God. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. That was a good show.
That was a good show.
But St. Elmo's Fire is interesting. I never really knew what it was other than like the movie, or I've always almost thought it was like a famous fire in New York, a building or whatever. But St. Elmo's Fire is essentially like, it's like reverse lightning. It's electromagnetic phenomena that like with plasma and stuff. Like if you Google image St. Elmo's Fire, it's amazing. Like back in the day, people like explorers and stuff would see it on ships, and they'd like, oh, the ship was on fire and all that, because it's lightning coming from the points on things. So it's not coming from the sky. It's light. It's essentially plasma lightning coming from like structures. So like you could be an explorer in the middle of the ocean and coming up on a ship, and it's like just shooting lightning everywhere. And you'd be like, if you don't know any better, back in the day when science wasn't a thing,
stay the fuck away from that guy.
Yeah, must sacrifice oxen. Yeah.
They must be headed to Trash Island. I feel like we learned, and I'm wrong so often. Maybe you can answer this, but I feel like we learned that lightning actually does not strike ground up first or something like that. Does it not actually? It's so fast it looks like it's coming sky down, but is it not a ground up thing?
I feel like I've heard that.
I'm probably wrong.
I feel like there's something different
about it.
Heat lightning is just lightning going to each other up in the clouds.
That's what that is.
But I think if anything, what lightning might be is connecting in the
middle. Okay, that might be it.
I could be wrong.
I like yours better. I like that better than coming up from the ground, because I don't buy it so much.
Yeah. And they do say lightning strikes twice. Like, it does happen a lot. Like, because, I mean, generally lightning strikes protruding objects. And if you're, you know, during...
Have you ever been struck or close to being hit by lightning?
No, but I did accidentally shock myself this morning.
this morning?
I generated too much static electricity on my carpet and then touched myself, and it was
a good jolt,
to say the least. Yeah.
A friend of mine's house was hit by lightning a couple years ago. They were having a kids' party too, and fucking lightning hit the house. Everyone happened to be outside, thank goodness. And when they went in, all the outlets were blown black. Like,
yikes.
They fucked the house up.
Holy
they had
shit.
To get a new roof put on in that whole section. But it blew everything in that house.
Wow.
That shit's no joke, man.
Yeah. So
I mean, knock on wood, I don't know anyone that's actually ever been struck by lightning, but that can't fucking feel good.
No.
We did, on a previous podcast, we did mention there was a pitcher who got struck by lightning and then proceeded to finish the entire game.
During the game?
Yeah.
Who the fuck got struck? A professional?
Yeah, he was a pro.
Who in the hell got hit by lightning?
It was back in the day, like in the 40s or 50s. Then again, I mean, and keep in mind, it was like, I think he only pitched
Ray Caldwell.
I think he only.
What inning?
I mean, I think it was like the ninth. Like, it was it's not like it was during the third inning.
Like man, we're not warming anybody up. Man. You think you throw this one out?
This is back in 1919. He was playing for the Cleveland Indians. He was knocked unconscious, refused to leave the game because he'd already pitched 8.2 innings, and then he got the final out for the win.
Holy
like,
shit.
Like, what a badass. Everyone else is like, I pulled my hamstring. Like, I got struck by lightning. I still got the outs.
All right, and still got
hustle
that last
up.
Out.
Hustle up. I'm going to send you to a garbage
Damn,
island, whatever that is.
That's right there.
Yeah. People were just a degree manlier back then, I think.
My hammy's tight. I'm going to sit out 3 days. This motherfucker's like, I got hit by lightning on the hill.
I forgot my Under Armour. It's too cold.
Yeah, right?
I left my compression shorts at home. Can't do it.
My glove's made out of metal.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I believe we are approaching our time. So, Ryan, thank you for being here, man.
Wow, thank you guys for having me. That was a lot of fun. I've learned quite a bit here today, gentlemen.
Mission accomplished.
I appreciate you having me.
What, plug yourself. Sell yourself to everybody.
I'm Ryan Sickler on Twitter, RyanSickler.com. If you want to see any of my stand-up dates, they're all there. Instagram, Ryan Sickler, and The Crab Feast, TheCrabFeast.com. We come out every Tuesday on iTunes. It's a storytelling podcast that, as you said, I do with Jay Larson. And, we're actually nominated for Stitcher Best Comedy this year.
Oh, very
nice.
Awesome.
We're excited. I see the little Stitcher Award over there for Nerdist in the corner.
Oh, yeah.
Nerdist cleans up. So glad to be here, man. Thank you guys for having me. I really enjoyed myself today. You guys are a lot of fun.
Thanks for coming. And as always, you can follow me on Twitter at my name is Razzle2.
And I'm at Osteoferocious. And if you'd like to talk to the podcast in an official capacity and you don't want to talk to us personally, you can talk to us at TWL Podcast on Twitter, TWLPodcast@gmail.com, or on Facebook, Today We Learned with Razzle and Dan.
Absolutely. And as always, thanks for listening. And if you can, give us a good review on iTunes, write us a comment, any sort of thing. Help us climb up those charts and tell your friends to subscribe. And we really appreciate it.
And as always, look before you leap, otherwise you're going to fall on your face.
Yeah.
Why not? Let's go with it.
There we go. Trashisland.com.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.